And this isn't some dusty old piece of vinyl from 1963. This was recorded, well, in the last year or two, I think. This is Duffy and a song called Mercy. And I love new artists who sound, well, they're bringing back that old sound. This is like the golden age of music. I kid you not. And this program you're listening to right now, this is not some repeat broadcast of an April Fool's show. This is the Straight Goods people. David Yurth is with us, and his device, his invention, eradicates all of the exhaust fumes that come out of an internal combustion engine before they leave the tailpipe. This is a game changer. This is, to say the least, disruptive technology. And we're about to take your questions and comments and find out who is out there listening in mere moments. Get on up to the coasttocoastam.com website, where webmaster Tim Binall has posted his usual assortment of tantalizing tidbits, the feature story. Check out this. It's a daredevil, a Russian, a thrill-crazed Russian stunt dude, jumping from a 50-foot high roof. And he's got this GoPro rig attached to his head. He walks to the edge of a building 50 feet above the ground, and then, you guessed it, he jumps off. You can check out that in the feature story section at coasttocoastam.com. And just in time for the, what is this now, 52nd anniversary of the JFK assassination, a mob hitman says he was the man on the grassy knoll. James Files claims in the documentary I Killed JFK that he was the man who killed President John F. Kennedy. And I think he's languishing in a prison up in Joliet, Illinois, if memory serves. I think I interviewed his wife one time. A fascinating chapter in the JFK assassination saga. James File could have been the gunman on the grassy knoll. Those are just two of the many stories you will find at coasttocoastam.com. All right, back with more of my conversation with inventor David Yurth and your phone calls when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. And we are back with David Yurth, checking in from the great state of Utah. He's the Director of Science and Technology for the Nova Institute of Technology. And the device, remember this now, you heard it here on Coast to Coast AM, the Corona Discharge Gas Plasma Disassociation System, and it eradicates, this is the claim, it eradicates all exhaust fumes produced by internal combustion engines before they leave the tailpipe. So we're talking about the end of air pollution, the end of air pollution. Now, before we go to the phones, I mentioned before the break, David, you know, this idea that we could have industrial revolutions in places that have been denied industrial revolutions, places like Africa. We could lift you, your device could help lift billions of people out of poverty. I mean, this is not just simply, you know, passing the emission standard test with the EPA and, you know, of interest to people at Volkswagen. I mean, this is potentially, you know, monumental stuff here we're talking about.
We hope so. We hope it introduces an era of energy generation that is devoid of contamination.
One other thought occurred to me, a bit of a paradox. I mean, you were working on an engine that would run on water. I know I'm oversimplifying here, a hydroxy or what have you. You wouldn't need this device if you could run a water or an engine on water, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so help sort of unravel that paradox then. Why not just proceed with trying to develop the water engine?
Well, we are. If your listeners go to the Nova website, novaiot.com, they will see in the technology inventory section an accumulation of 5 or 6 dozen different kinds of technologies, which slice and dice this issue from a number of different conceptual directions. The issue that we're really trying to focus on now is how to put an end to the contamination of the environment as a product of the combustion, ignition, burning of various different kinds of fuels and the propagation of toxic, contaminating pollutants. That's what we're really concerned about. There are bridge technologies that will help us do other things. And because the world is so diverse in its needs, there is no such thing as a silver bullet. We've got to be able to take an enlightened approach to dealing with energy demands that operate in different kinds of industries and different kinds of functions and different kinds of cultures and societies in different kinds of geographical locations and so on. So if you examine the inventory of our technologies, you'll see that we've spent a lot of time getting our heads around how to do things in a way that supports the requirement for energy generation without contaminating the environment. It's not easy, but
no.
We're working on it.
All right, let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, Doug is in Tallahassee, Florida. Doug, good evening. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello there. I'm from Tallahassee and a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
My question is about the end disbursements at the end of the tailpipe after you use this device. And also, what other, do you have a catalyst involved in there that also enables this to happen? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Doug. Thank you.
That's a fair question. There are really two questions there. I'll answer the second half first. The architecture of the device that propagates the plasma field includes the use of some pretty exotic materials. Some of the materials, for example, palladium, we use to coat a portion of the plasma emitter surface because our data tells us that in the presence of the right kind of plasma with the right kind of electronics, when CO2 and some of the other gases come into contact with a palladium material, that we are able to much more efficiently unwind the binding forces that hold those molecules together. With respect to the first part of your question, what we've done with this device is to take the principles that are embodied in a new model of fine-scale physical interactions, which we authored with my colleague Don Ayers, a really bright guy who really understands things in a way that is uncommon. We produced a monograph that was published open source on the internet. Everyone can find it. If you will Google the term, the letter Y-bias and angularity, you'll find all kinds of references and sources where you can download the monograph. What the monograph does is describe how the dynamical forces that organize information to create atoms and organize atoms to create molecules is all explained. And it's explained in a fundamentally different way than you find in conventional textbooks that teach physics and electrodynamics. We've taken those principles and embodied them in a physical device which uses a fundamentally different approach to imposing artificially induced field effects in a way that simply fractures these molecules using a process that we refer to in our own documents as non-linear dissonance.
Non-linear dissonance. I mean, it sounds, David, like we should just throw out our grade 10 science textbooks altogether. I mean, you've discovered, or you have reconfirmed, I guess, what others have suspected or theorized about about water. I mean, it's something, or hydrogen atoms. It's something entirely different than the architecture, I suppose. It's something entirely different than what we ever imagined.
Well, the model that is applied to understanding molecular dynamics is insufficient in a number of important regards. We don't have time to go into that, and your listeners probably don't want to know about it anyway. But here's something for you to think about. Every molecule of water in its liquid form exchanges one of its hydrogens with another water molecule close by at the rate of 10 followed by 17 zeros per second.
What does that mean?
That means that water in its liquid form is far more dynamic in its behavior than is recognized, explained, or accommodated by the standard physical model. What it means is if you could stop time in an instant, at least half of all the hydrogens that are ordinarily connected to oxygens to make molecules, at least half of those hydrogens are not connected to anything. They are, in fact, in transition between one molecule and another.
And that's significant because?
It is significant because in order to remove those hydrogen protium ions from a liquid solution of water, you don't have to crack them away from a molecule. They're already cracked. They're in transition. What you have to do instead is rely on a model that gives you a means by which to give them an alternative path to escape from the solution so you can collect them and use them for another purpose.
Like running an internal combustion
engine.
Like
running an internal combustion engine.
On water.
And there are a lot of myths about how this works. One of the things we discovered that is part of the embodiment of our invention is that when you expose cold fog water vapor, and you have Vicks VapoRub and a little ionizer in your kids' room when they get a cold, right?
Oh, sure. We used to eat that stuff.
Cold fog that comes out of that ionizer, exposed to the pulsating plasma field that we generate in our corona discharge device, literally we set those water droplets, that finely ionized vapor, we set it on fire. It emits brilliant white light just like a Coleman camp lantern, and for all the same reasons. And it makes a lot of noise. And it does a bunch of other things that are part of our instrumentation process. What it means is that if I reduce water to cold fog and I expose it to the right kind of a field effect, I can extract an extraordinary amount of energy out of that stuff. If you go to the U.S. Department of Energy website and look up the ideal gas formula for oxyhydrogen gas, the ideal gas formula, which is the standard stuff that's taught in all the chemistry and physics classes, tells you that based on everything that science knows, that one mole, 22.4 liters of water molecule gas, possesses a specific kind of energy density. And we compare it with 87 octane gasoline, for example. The standard ideal gas molecule model says that it takes 23 liters of oxyhydrogen gas to give you the same energy output as 1 cubic centimeter, 1 milliliter of 87 octane gasoline. We know for an absolute, categorical, unequivocal fact, after 10 years of experimenting with this stuff under carefully instrumented conditions, that number is absolute nonsense.
Well, listen, I'm going to have you back just to talk about that alone. Never mind the eradicating exhaust fumes.
But what it means in practical fact is that if we have an apparatus that can extract that energy coefficient, understanding what the molecule is and what it does and how it works and what its real energy density is, we can then build and design engines that use that information in a way that produces no exhaust at all. And we've designed that engine, and that information has been published on open source on the internet. So,
all right. You know, Let me get to the calls. People, we've lit them up like a Christmas tree, as they say. That's all right. No, this is mind-blowing stuff, David. Absolutely mind-blowing stuff. Brian is on the wild card line in California. Brian, go ahead. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome.
Thanks. And hey, Richard, you're doing a great job on Coast to Coast.
Thank you.
David, question for you. Pretty interesting stuff you got going on there. If you've got a device that that can unwind, as you say, disassociate the exhaust molecules at such a rate that the average American car can deliver, have you thought about doing the same thing pre-combustion? I mean, assuming that you keep oxygen out of it so you don't ignite it in your device, have you thought about stripping gasoline molecules down so that you're burning hydrogen in the engine only?
Yes, actually, we have. The patent we've applied for the embodiment that is a spark plug actually does exactly that inside the combustion chamber. The plasma field pulses in such a way that it fragments, dissociates all of the molecules of all the gases and fluids that are in the combustion chamber before they are ignited. And what that does then in our test protocols is it allows us, for example, to burn gasoline in a conventional engine at a 40-to-1 fueled air-to-fuel ratio instead of a 15-to-1 air-to-fuel ratio. It means that when we combust the fuel, all of the fuel is being combusted. It's not 43 or 46% efficient like most internal combustion engines. It's virtually 100% efficient because we've reduced the molecules to their fragmented, ionized, dissociated ions. And then when high voltage is introduced into the system, not the voltage that you get out of a conventional spark plug at 20 to 25,000 volts, but at voltages in excess of 80,000 volts, which is not sustainable with a regular spark plug, when you dissociate those molecules with a plasma and then you enable them to ignite with a very high voltage, very sharp, high-rise pulse of a carefully controlled duration, then what you get is virtually complete combustion, and the exhaust profile is much different.
All right. Well, so it gets better and better. So not only do you eliminate all of the noxious fumes, you increase fuel efficiency on the order of... on the order of what, 40 to 80%?
Yes, sir. And we're
so,
in the process now of undergoing testing with California Environmental Engineering and EPA labs at Fullerton.
The hits just keep on coming. Hold on, David. We'll come back and find out, you know, how long is this going to take until this is commercially available? Here's Tom Waits taking us into the break with Jersey Girl. My name is Richard Serrett. You're listening to Coast AM. Well, I don't know. I think calling the Corona Discharge Gas Plasma Disassociation System a disruptive technology is like calling the Beatles, oh, just another bar band. We will get back to our conversation with inventor David Yurth in just a few moments. And just a reminder, coming up, at the top of the hour, Michael Smith, a former military intelligence officer, award-winning journalist, one of the world's leading experts on Britain's spies, will be here to talk about the real James Bonds. The real James Bonds going back nearly 100 years. And this all just in time for the debut across North America this weekend of the new James Bond film, Spectre. Have you caught George Norrie's new TV show? Well, it's not new, but it's exciting, it's fresh, and if you're interested in dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, all things unexplained, check out Beyond Belief TV. And don't miss this upcoming episode, Wednesday, November the 11th. It's called Superpowers of the Mind. It's featuring Jim Carroll. And it's a discussion about the potential of the human mind. It's as limitless as the number of stars in the universe. For more details and to subscribe, visit beyondbelief.com. That's beyondbelief.com. All right, more on the Corona Discharge Gas Plasma Disassociation System. I just love saying that so much. We'll get back to that discussion when Coast to Coast continues right after this. All right, let's get right back to the phones for inventor David Yerth. And let's see, we have Annie on the wildcard line in Alabama. Annie, welcome to Coast.
Hello, thank you for letting me on. And David, can you please convince me that you have not designed this device on behalf of the globalists to dump out into the atmosphere, to throw dust out, for people to breathe, to kill people with, and to pollute people's crops with? Are you going to put it on your tomatoes? I want you to put it on your tomatoes and feed the tomatoes to your children. I don't want to grow my tomatoes in it.
Well, good evening to you. I grew up in my early years in Montgomery, Alabama. My first grade teacher was Miss Lucy Bell Smith, and she taught me how to speak Alabama. So, you know, good evening to you. Look, what comes out the back of our tailpipe is essentially the stuff that occurs in nature from which fuel is manufactured in order to create energy. What you get out the back is carbon in its natural form, in a form that is absolutely benign, as opposed to the form that comes out now, which is certainly not benign, and water and gases. And that's it.
Would you grow your tomato plants in it, David?
Well, your tomato plants grow in stuff that is elemental, with water and oxygen and nitrogen. And that's what comes out the tailpipe.
All right, Annie, thank you for that. Here's a real naive question for you, David. Because you mentioned, you know, going through the patent process. I mean, you could see this technology squashed. You could see it suppressed. Why not put it out there on the internet, give it to the world as a gift?
Well, in a manner of speaking, that's exactly what we're doing. You know, the issues related to surviving the process of creating a disruptive innovation and then getting it into the game, that process is evolving. It takes different tools and different strategies today than were available 25 years ago. Many of the inventions that are included in our inventory are things that have already been fully disclosed over the internet. They're available on Pure Energy Systems Wiki and a number of other websites that are maintained in various server devices all over the world. The monograph that describes the model of science that we use to understand what to do and how to do it is also an open source document. We published it in August of 2005. And, you know, if you Google that document now under the search terms that we talked about earlier, if you Google Y bias and angularity, you'll get about 11 million hits. That information is being used and referred to in other people's scientific papers and in their own research work, in their own design engineering processes.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line again, Sam is in Washington. Sam, good evening. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good evening. Your guest is amazing. I've spent hours reading Stan Meyer's stuff and your thing about the water molecules being, the hydrogen being in motion sure makes water seem alive. It seems a lot closer to stuff Stan Meyer was talking about. My question is, David, are you familiar with Rudy Gunnerman's patents on his aqueous fuel engine? That weren't just patents. I know that they actually had engines running on that.
Well, I don't know Rudy Gunnerman.
He was a German in World War II who came over to Arizona after the war.
Uh-huh.
and he was able to get a gasoline model engine and a diesel engine running on about 1/5 gasoline and about 4/5 water.
Mm-hmm.
And they used a catalyst and a high compression in the combustion chamber. And I don't know why it worked, but I think he was dissociating the water into hydrogen and oxygen.
It's entirely possible. The compression ratio is one issue. The way you mix it is another. A third element
right.
has to do with the way you
anyway,
introduce
if,
the
art. If you want to check it out, his name is Rudy Gunnerman. You can look up his patents.
That'd be great. I'd be happy to do that. We've got a couple of hundred patents and all sorts of research information about a number of different iterations of engines that run on water. We've built some ourselves, so we know it can be done. And the engines that we're building now are a little different. One of the mistakes that people make with using water to build engines or to drive engines is that they use piston engines. And the problem with that is that you use a piston engine in a way that forces the mass to reverse its direction with every cycle. And that's why the Carnot efficiency limitation occurs, because you're using up all of that extra energy to reverse the motion of the mass. So we've designed engines that use water. We've done experimentation, for example, where in a test engine, using 1 milliliter of water in the little combustion chamber in our test engine and one single pulse in our plasma corona discharge device, we create enough power to shatter a 1/4 inch thick piece of tempered glass. We get 1.24 horsepower from 1 milliliter of water in our test apparatus. And the engine that we've designed does it with a circular rotary application rather than a reciprocating application, because then you can operate with real efficiency. You're not reversing the motion of the mass. So,
okay, Sam in Washington, thank you for that.
Yes,
what do you need, David, your company and you, what do you need in terms of resources, investment, to bring this device that eradicates exhaust fumes from the back, from the tail of an internal combustion engine, what do you need to bring it to market so that it's commercially available for everyone?
Our game plan is really a three-phased development project. We've arranged for capital for the first two phases, and we're in the process of executing the tail end of phase one in some applications and beginning phase two in some others. By the time we get to the end of the second quarter of next year, we'll be looking for capital participation that's specifically targeted to fields of use that are very narrowly defined, and each one of those is a little different. The test beds that we develop are not inexpensive. It costs about $500,000 to build the 1/10 scale floating bed coal-fired power plant equivalent with the instrumentation and all of the documentation stuff that we use. What comes out the back of that is the research data associated with 26 different kinds of coal. You know, what kind of heat do they generate, and what happens when we remediate the exhaust gases, and what sort of a profile do we encounter that varies from one kind of coal to the other? We understand that it's a very big deal, and we're actively looking for suitable strategic partners. If any of your listeners are interested in talking with us about that, they're welcome to contact me on the NOVA webpage or on my personal webpage. We'll be happy to have conversations with serious inquiries about driving this thing into the market. Our strategy is to license it. We're science guys. We have a wonderful partner who manufactures our pieces and who supports our tooling and fabrication and testing requirements. Guys that are DARPA certified to build special projects for the government and so on, really great engineers. When we put all these pieces together, what we want to be able to do is introduce the technology in a way that's very specific to particular kinds of applications. Today, we're building and designing and testing apparatus that applies the technology to flue vents from refineries, to gas flue vents with pyrolysis and biological incinerators, to large diesel engines, to coal-fired power plants, to automobiles and light-duty trucks, both in retrofit aftermarket embodiments and in original equipment embodiments that become part of the original apparatus that comes out of the factory. And each one of those licenses, we're in the process of trying to find the right strategic partners to make those things happen. We're also writing scientific papers, doing peer review work, working with Dandelion Books to publish the information that's needed so that other people with their genius can step up and take this information to the next level. We really view this in terms of the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk. In a manner of speaking, even though it works and even though we're comfortable with it, we know that the refinements that will come because of the genius of other people who are much smarter and better and more qualified to do particular kinds of things than we are, we'll take this to places in applications and levels that we simply are not equipped to pursue. We're content to bring the technology to bear, to prove that it works, to have it peer-reviewed and independently verified, to license it, get it into the game in the hands of people that need it, and then allow it to become the DC-3 equivalent, hoping it doesn't take 35 years to get us from where we are to where it really needs to be. We're really concerned about solving the problem.
David, do you foresee any resistance coming from...
Of course.
Obviously, there's, you know, many quarters. There's a big oil and others. But here's... Well, actually, I could see big oil in your corner because now, you know, we can burn fossil fuels with abandon. But here's another potential foe, and this has to do with certain environmental groups that have, let's say, been infiltrated by people that are more interested in control. And you know, there is this whole industry that's being built around now carbon trading and carbon tax and carbon capturing carbon, and so forth. And if your device is readily available, all of that is nullified.
That's right. It becomes irrelevant. Look, in the final analysis here, there are lots of people whose interests are threatened by the emergence of this technology. All of the people who are sponsoring and getting funding from government agencies and the United Nations to drive all of the initiatives that are part of the global climate change conversation, all those technologies, the ones that were identified in the proceedings of the conference that was held in Europe in the spring, attempt to deal with the problem after the gases have been released into the environment. None of them work to prevent the gases from getting into the environment, except to the extent that you stop producing the gases because you limit production. We're in the process of doing a joint venture testing routine now with a publicly regulated utility that has large-scale diesel equipment that they operate, and 40% of their cost is driven by their need to comply with exhaust emission requirements that are addressed by pieces of equipment built by people who don't understand how the gases work. So if we solve the problem at the source, all the people that supply all that remediation equipment don't have any reason to be in business. They're not happy about that.
No, I'll say. Let me see if I can sneak one more quick call in here. Let's see. East of the Rockies, Phil is in Columbus, Ohio. A quick question or comment, Phil, if you would. Hi, Phil, are you there? Phil in Columbus? Okay, let's move quickly. Let's say hi to Charles on the wild card line in Los Angeles. Charles, go ahead. A quick question.
Thank you. Approximately, if this is ready, within about 6 months, we'll say, what would the approximate cost be for the average owner? And do you have anything in the real near future for diesels, because they don't use spark plugs?
Well, that's right. And this, we don't care in this application whether you use spark plugs or not. What we care about is what comes out the tailpipe. In automobile and light-duty truck applications, our best guess is that the cost of equipment for a retrofit is going to be somewhere around $450 or $500. For large-scale diesels, it may be a little more than that, but probably not more than $1,500.
All right, Charles, thank you for that. Have you invited any of your, the local congressman to come down and check this out, or do you have the ears of anyone on Capitol Hill?
We're in the process now, Richard, of trying to put our material in front of the right people under carefully controlled circumstances. We're not political people, but we're certainly sensitized to the rigors of the political process. What we don't want is for this technology to become a political football, and what we do want is for it to get into the game without regard to the politics, at least to the extent that that's possible. So, you know, politicians can help you, but they have short memories. And they make promises that they cannot keep or don't intend to keep. I know about the political process because I worked in the Nixon White House. I was the executive director of the state Republican Party in the state of Utah for a few years. I've been elected to public office during my lifetime. I understand the process. So we're trying to be very, very careful about what we say and who we say it to and what kind of arrangements we make with the people that we invite to become strategic partners with us.
Well, I'm going on your word here that this works, we better see this, on the market soon. Otherwise, we know the system is irreparably broken. If we can't have this technology, David, what hope is there for us?
Well, that's our point. That's our point. There isn't any reason for people to be held hostage to energy as a commodity held in scarce supply simply because it creates contaminating exhaust gases.
That All right, David, give us a website quickly once again. A quick website, David.
Okay, at http novaiot.com.
You're a brave man, David. Thank you for this.
Thanks for your help, Richard. I really appreciate you.
David Yurth, be safe. All right, the real James Bonds when Coast to Coast AM continues. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.